buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. Tom, ready for the good news?
Well, it's the holiday season.
Yes.
Christmas is nigh. What other good news do you have?
Well, you know, I'm kind of like a weather hobbyist. And so we've been talking on the show this week about the driest October, November. Well, we had a half inch of rain on our rain gauge, the Buckmaster Hacienda.
Well, no.
Yeah.
And you're up in the foothills of the Catalina somewhere?
Yes, central foothills, yeah. Swan and River area, about a half inch. So that is good news.
Can I say something to the two of you? Mr. Tim Steller is in the studio with you.
Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star is
with
me in
the studio. You know what's going to happen December 22nd?
Tim, do you know what's going to happen?
The days will be longer because the shortest day is December 21st.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a minute amount longer. But no, that's not what I'm referring to, Tim. We're going to have a new way to look at the stellar universe.
Ooh.
My universe?
That's the launch date set for the James Webb Telescope. I've got my fingers crossed.
Oh, we'll get a stellar look.
The stellar universe.
There you go. All right, Tom, thank you very much. Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, December 10th, 2021. We are on 1030 Tucson's trusted source for news talk. The call letters KVOI. That's like The Voice. We're wrapping up year 11 in a couple of weeks here. We'll launch year 12 in January. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts of my show at Buckmaster Show. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And on Friday, I like to do a media shout out. These are folks in the media business who have been supporting us pretty much since day one. Dylan Smith is a great supporter at TucsonSentinel.com. Dan Shear supports us at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. The Tucson Local Media Group, Jim Ninsel's affiliated with them and their publications, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our thanks to all of those folks. Before we introduce our Friday Focus interview, Tim Steller is with us, the 2021 Arizona Newspaper Association Journalist of the Year and 2010 Arizona Press Club Columnist of the Year. There you go, Tim. You're having a good year.
Yeah, good enough. Yep. Always cranking.
Ready for our Friday Focus interview?
I am considering being ready, but I'm still pondering whether the Steller... Was he talking about me? Stellar?
No. Tom, real quickly.
On December 22nd, people will be looking deeper into me?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Unless you're going to be in French Guiana at that time, which I doubt.
It's a launch of a rocket out of French Guiana.
The Ariane 5 is going to be launching the James Webb Telescope,
which
is going to be at least 10 times more effective and dramatic than the Hubble ever was.
There you go. And then folks will get a stellar look.
Way to look at.
Okay.
Okay,
Friday Focus interview is with Will Humble, Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. His 30 years in public health includes more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various roles, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Recently, he has served as a health policy director at the University of Arizona and currently serves as an adjunct faculty member at the UA Zuckerman College of Public Health. And Will is also one of two dozen regular contributors to the Buckmaster Show. He is our contributor on public health, joining us on the live line from Phoenix. Will, how are you?
Oh, good afternoon. We got about 4/10 of an inch up here in Phoenix.
Oh, wow. Very good. That's very unusual that Phoenix and Tucson would be on the same page on anything, including rainfall amounts, because they're usually pretty darn different. Crowding of Arizona's strained healthcare system, Will Humble, continues to worsen during the latest surge. Now, 6 months ago, could you have foreseen we would be talking about hospital crowding hitting a pandemic high? Didn't it seem like 6 months ago the worst was over?
Yeah. No, I did think that. I really did think that the worst was over. I also underestimated how successful getting people vaccinated would be this fall. Really, it was a pretty tepid, once summer was over, we just never made a lot more progress on getting people vaccinated. And then, in a large part because of the policies that have been implemented and failed to have been implemented. There were a lot of incentives that could have been built into the system to get more people vaccinated that the governor decided not to implement and actually signed bills trying to discourage. That's a topic for another matter. But the short answer is no, I didn't think that it would be like this.
It's
every bit as bad already as last year at this time, and I just never thought that would happen.
It's almost as if you haven't been vaccinated, even if you've had the two shots and that immunity is starting to wane, this Delta it's going to find you.
Oh, if you're unvaccinated, it's going to find you. It will. It's going to find every single unvaccinated person eventually, mm-hmm. or Omicron will find.
Will, Tim Steller here. You have said various times that you think we are in crisis standards of care in Arizona hospitals, or at least in maybe the Phoenix area, I think. Can you explain more what you mean by that?
Yeah, so there's two levels of, there's regular standards of care. That's what everyone is used to in the hospital system, in absence of a pandemic. The next level up is called contingency standards of care. So that's when hospitals redirect resources, increase their staffing ratios. They change their procedures for elevating person to a higher level of care. In other words, what it takes to go from a general ward floor to an ICU unit. How can you graduate from ED into a general ward floor? Earlier discharges. So those are the kinds of things in contingency standards of care. And we've been in contingency standards of care for the last month about pretty much everywhere in Arizona. Now we're progressing to that next level, which is called crisis standards of care. And that's where you've done everything that you can in a hospital for earlier discharge, admission changes, staffing ratios, repurposing rooms, that sort of thing. And you're at the limit of what you can do under contingency standards, and you operate under crisis standards. So that means withholding care from certain people, making those really hard decisions. There have been a few hospitals, smaller ones mostly, who conceded that they were in crisis standards of care where they had to actually withhold care or were not able to transfer somebody who needed a higher level of care, and it resulted in really bad outcomes or even deaths. In the Phoenix area, we are definitely at crisis standards of care for the most acutely ill patients in respiratory distress, and that is related to these ECMO machines. They're essentially machines that take the blood out of your body, oxygenate it, and put it back into your body when your lungs are so badly damaged that you can't, even with 4 liters of oxygen a minute, you still can't stay oxygenated. Now, the smaller hospitals they never have had these ECMO machines, but the big tertiary care, the high-level hospitals in the Phoenix and Tucson area do have ECMOs, and they're exhausted. They're gone. Every single one is in use. And so you're in crisis standards of care when you don't have another ECMO machine and you have to decide who gets it. Like, I have to pull somebody off ECMO, give it to someone else who's more likely to survive, or I decide to keep the person on ECMO that I already know is going to die, and the person who's ventilated but needs the ECMO can't get the ECMO because I'm unwilling to pull that guy off. Do you see what I'm saying? That's crisis standards of care.
So
that's happening at that high level.
So to be clear, you're deducing this from what you're reading about ECMO machines and that sort of thing, but it's not something that the state is recognizing or that the hospitals themselves are announcing. Is that right?
That's well, general. The state has not announced it, and I do not expect Interim Director Harrington or Dr. Carmona, certainly not the governor, to admit that we're in crisis standards of care. And there have, and on an ad hoc basis, there have been smaller hospitals, and I won't call them out myself, that have actually conceded that they were in crisis standards of care at times over the last couple of weeks. So the question is, what level of candor does the CEO have, you know, or the chief clinical officer? But they all know that they're at that threshold, and the sad thing is there's really no light at the end of the tunnel.
So these are decisions that the hospitals make on a moment-by-moment basis, I take it, that if they are out of ECMO machines for whatever, then effectively, if other people come in needing them, you are in crisis standards of care because you are unable to provide the life-saving treatment that they need, and so you have to decide who gets it.
That's the hallmark indication of crisis standards, when you are actually withholding care. You're not patching things up. You're not moving people around. You're not changing discharge. That's contingency standards. You do that, plus you have to decide, I can't afford to put this person on now because I've already got this person. It's like you're withholding care, basically.
What does that...
Because you're forced.
Yeah. Where does that leave people that have a heart attack or something really serious? I mean, this is like we're walking on eggshells here, you know, just hoping, dear God, I hope I don't have some kind of a health emergency where I've got to get over to the emergency room.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right about it. And just like last winter, I mean, it's car accidents, it's heart attacks, it's strokes, it's somebody comes in with acute appendicitis. I mean, no matter what it is that you're going to need for care, you will get a different standard of care for the next couple of months, at least, for whatever your condition is, because there just simply isn't the staff to give people the normal standard of care. And it has results. It results in all-cause mortality increases. In other words, we did an analysis last winter that looked at everyone knows we've had 22,000 deaths for COVID, but we found another 5,000 just last winter, and we haven't updated this report yet. We're doing that now, of people who died of other things over and above what you would normally expect. Now, that's not all from, you know, poor care in hospitals. A lot of it is from people who have heart conditions, for example, that decided not to go to their cardiologist and skip their appointment, and then things got worse for them because, you know, they skipped normal, you know, specialist or even primary care things. And so it's a combination of people skipping appointments, people not being able to get non-emergency procedures. That's the other thing that's happening right now. Like, if you needed a heart valve or a stent or something like that, you know, good luck. You know, you're probably having your procedures canceled. There's listeners right now shaking their heads saying, yeah, that happened to my family member where they were scheduled for a procedure that they canceled. And that goes directly to the influx of COVID patients that are in the system. They're absorbing 40% of the resources right now. And we're in the winter where we're always at the margins because of the influenza and the winter visitors that come in. And now you've got COVID people on top of it.
And Arizona's leading cause of death is COVID. Is that correct?
During the pandemic. That's right. Now, heart disease and cancer are close, 2 and 3. But Arizona was the only state where COVID-19 was the leading cause of death during the pandemic. So over the last 18 to 20 months.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Will Humble, stick around on the phone. I'm going to talk about something really, really pleasant.
Let's take a break and talk about something pleasant.
Something really pleasant, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery. Tim, I know you love sweets, right?
Don't remind me. I'm opening some candy up right now.
I thought so. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Steve and the team are listening right now, and Steve, congratulations. a record. You and the team put together a record over Thanksgiving for Mona's, doing 650 pies for Thanksgiving. I know. Most pumpkin led the way, but now it's time to start thinking about Christmas. Put in your order now for your Christmas pies, your bread on the table, the rolls. And how about a Kringle, a Danish Kringle, or its cousin, the Danish coffee cake, would be great on Christmas morning and on Christmas Eve. Meanwhile, Tim Steller has just opened his box of chocolates. We won't give the brand name, but it's a well-known Swiss chocolate brand. How is it?
Mm.
How is it, Tim?
Mm, fantastic.
Oh, man, that does look good. Mm. Just like a Danish Kringle would look good. We brought in the Danish coffee cake. Tim, you missed that by a week. That was last Friday, but everybody enjoyed it very much. All right, let's take a break right here. More with Will Humble after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The Friday Focus interview today is with Will Humble. Will is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and the Executive Director of the Arizona Health Association, former Director of the Arizona Department of Health. Tim Steller is with us from the Arizona Daily Star. All right, let's talk about Omicron. do you think it's being assumed Omicron will edge out Delta, but you look at what's going on with Delta right now in the country, that seems like a heavy lift.
Oh, no, Omicron's going to take over from Delta. It's out-competing Delta wherever it has gotten a toehold. And the best example of that is in South Africa, where they actually have a pretty good surveillance system, by the way, and research institutions, and which is why they found it first. It is out-competing Delta by a wide margin. And so within, I would say, a couple of months for sure, we will see Omicron being the dominant strain that's circulating globally and in Arizona and in the U.S. We didn't 10 days ago, we didn't know the answer to that question. Now that's been well established. The other thing we need to know, and we don't have a handle on yet, is what is the clinical presentation for Omicron compared to Delta? Is it the same as Delta? In other words, does it have the same clinical presentation? Is it about as dangerous as Delta, or is it slightly less virulent or deadly than Delta, or is it substantially less virulent or deadly? I think there's enough evidence to say we don't think Omicron is more dangerous side by side in terms of clinical presentation compared to Delta, but what we need to have happen is for Omicron to be substantially less dangerous than Delta. The reason I say that is because let's assume for a moment that Omicron is twice as contagious as Delta. That means unless Omicron is half as deadly as Delta, Omicron is going to cause even more damage and death. And, you know, we always say morbidity, mortality. I'm trying not to use those kinds of words. But it's going to kill more people unless it's substantially less virulent or serious. And because it's so much more contagious, it's going to infect more people more quickly. The initial information from South Africa among younger persons is that Omicron is less likely to end up someone needing hospitalization and oxygen and dying. But in South Africa, the dominant group that's been infected so far are people under 40. And so you can't draw your conclusions based on a cohort of people in their 20s and 30s. You need to see what happens with people in their 60s and up in South Africa over the next 10 days, because that's how long it takes to progress from an infection to a bad outcome. So by Christmas, we'll have a handle on, is Omicron less dangerous than Delta in terms of clinical presentation? And if so, how much less? And that will allow us to draw conclusions about what the actual on-the-ground impact will be from Omicron when it does finally take over from Delta in Arizona. And that process is on the way, is happening in real time right now.
As far as this mutation goes, is it typical that a virus such as this, when it mutates to become more transmissible, does that sort of mutation typically lead it to be less virulent or have less severe impacts, or is that just coincidence if that's the case with Omicron?
Yeah. So if you step back a minute and talk and think about this in terms of evolution, right? Evolutionary pressure favors those organisms that can reproduce easily and that can, and that's it. You know, if you could reproduce easily and create more progeny, you're going to be a successful organism. And that's what this is, an organism, this SARS-CoV-2 virus. And so evolutionarily, there tends to be a trend for it to become less serious. Now, why would that be? Well, because if you kill your host, you're less likely to be able to replicate enough virus and infect more people. So that's one of the reasons why this, starting going back from the very beginning, when I first saw how much asymptomatic spread there was on that cruise ship back in the spring of 2020, that's when I knew that this was going to be a really bad virus in terms of how many people it could infect, because if you that's ideal for an organism to have asymptomatic spread, because then you can spread yourself with impunity and create more copies of yourself. If you're killing your host, the human, that's bad for you, because you're not going to be as, you can't infect as many people that way. So there tends to be evolutionary drift towards less serious outcomes just from that perspective. The other thing is, over time, more and more people are becoming infected and recover. Most people do recover, and so they have antibodies to protect themselves. People who got vaccinated have antibodies and T cells to protect themselves. And so you have, amongst the human population globally and in the U.S. and in Arizona, you start to, over time, accumulate more and more people who that have antibody immunity protection. And so therefore the breakthrough cases are less severe. So there's two reasons why it gets less serious over time. The pool of people that have been infected and recovered and vaccinated makes it less serious from that perspective. And then the general evolutionary pressure is towards favoring organisms that don't kill their host.
I've read an analysis, a very preliminary, by a South African doctor, an expert, who was contemplating whether this isn't, although serious, a sign of the eventual demise of the pandemic. Because, he compared it to the flu outbreak of 1919 and said that this is eventually how it ended, that it mutated itself into, not insignificance, but, into a virus that didn't kill many people and therefore wasn't a worrisome pandemic. Is that possible, or am I just being too optimistic?
No, that's possible. And for those two reasons. Number one, more and more people get infected and vaccinated, and so they have, essentially everything becomes a breakthrough case in the end. And so that's probably the dominant reason why it will get less virulent over time, is more and more people getting infected and recovering, as well as people getting vaccinated. And then there's that other piece, that general evolutionary pressure that favors organisms and mutations that allow it to replicate more easily, and that means not killing your host. Although that could happen, could go the other way. It doesn't always happen that way on evolution.
All right.
It could get worse.
You're listening to Will Humble, the former Arizona Department of Health director, and Tim Steller is with me. It's the Buckmaster Show. Will, debates over these masks and mandates have raised some very deep questions about who should set the rules for society. I'm wondering, in your particular profession of public health, has all of this setback messaging, and what kind of damage has been done to the public health profession in the United States?
I don't think you can answer that question and say in the United States. I think you have to answer that question on a state by state basis.
Okay.
Because that's the thing, is that we've got, and if you look at the way our democracy, the way our republic is set up, and you look at the way who has the authority in our country, it's really governors that have a lot more to do with, I shouldn't say a lot more, because the federal government had a lot to do with the vaccines, and that's a critical component. But in terms of the interventions we're talking about here on masking and so forth, governors have more ability to influence that than presidents or anybody at the federal level. And so you have this blend of interventions across these 50 states plus Puerto Rico and the territories, where different governors were making different decisions and getting much different outcomes. And so you have states like, Vermont, which used really good evidence-based practices. They had great health directors. Maine's the same way. You got a governor, you got health directors that are competent, that are making evidence-based decisions. They're doing things like universal masking. They're requiring vaccination of state employees and university folks and of employers. They're implementing, a check. Like, I was in New York a couple weeks ago. You go into a restaurant, bar, nightclub, whatever, wherever you go, you have to show your vaccination card. I went to the Natural History Museum. They check your vaccination card and your driver's license to make sure it's really you. So you have governors making these decisions, and in those states, the reputation of public health is solid, right? People are like, that worked. we're in much better shape than my relatives that live in some other state like Texas or Arizona or Florida. And so I think in many states, the reputation of public health continues to be sound. In other states, in our state, how would you think a lot of people feel like the performance of the state health department was?
Yeah.
You know? Not good.
No.
Many of the county health department, by the way, your county health department down there, Pima, Director Cullen, and before that, Dr. Bob, they did a really good job. They, in many ways, their hands were tied because of the things the state did. But where the counties had authority, the counties did a good job. So it's a mosaic of, you know, performance at the local, state, and federal level.
Speaking of the state response, I recall when Dr. Richard Carmona was hired by the governor to lead response recently, you had an open mind and, you know, were hoping for the best, that Dr. Carmona would do a good job, all that. How do you feel he's done?
Well, I got to be honest. Let me put it this way. He's definitely an improvement over Director Crist, but I have been disappointed with his unwillingness to dive into those core public health policy intervention recommendations and around universal masking, around vaccine checks, around vaccine mandates. He has continually said that he doesn't want to talk about politics. And in my mind, things that are political, that's the way he calls it. In my mind, it's like the interventions we're talking about are squarely in the world of policy. And that means that they are political. And so I think if you're going to take politics off the board, if you're going to take policy off the board, you greatly reduce your ability to affect change. And I think there were some missed opportunities that he has been unwilling to take advantage of in that regard. And I think he could have, because I do think that he has a lot of leverage with the governor. I think the governor understands that, you know, the initial many, many months of the response under Director Crist was inadequate, and that he knows he needs Dr. Carmona. And so I think I believe that he could have used he could have done a little bit more brinksmanship and put some more conditions around what he was willing to do and say. But he's his own man. I respect him. I always have. I consider him a friend. But that doesn't mean you always agree with the decisions they make and the things that they do.
All right. In summary here, Will Humble, where are we going with this? What when is Delta burning itself out? What's the transition from Omicron to Delta going to be like?
Well, we don't know that yet, because we don't know how serious the symptoms are with Omicron. One thing we know for sure, Omicron is in the process of taking over from Delta. That's happening as we speak, and it will continue to happen over the Christmas holidays and into January. I'm crossing my fingers that it's a less serious variant in terms of clinical presentation, because it is going to infect more people more quickly. So that's the process that's underway right now. I don't know what else to say about it. The hospital system is going to continue to be in crisis for many weeks. And I hate to say that, because it's really disturbing.
It really is. Will Humble, thank you very much. Will, we'll talk with you in a couple of weeks before the end of the year to get an update. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Will
Humble with us. Tim Steller stays on board here for another segment with me on the Buckmaster Show. Friday in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tim Steller, he's all fired up here on sugar. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, and I did present Tim with a little Christmas present, some chocolates, and he dove into it. Tom Fairbanks got one, too. Tom, did you enjoy yours? It was really delicious, wasn't it? Yeah. Anyway, you're all fired up from the sugar. I think they call it a sugar high. This column, gerrymandering, or talking about the redistricting, and most for most folks, probably when you start talking about redistricting, they're not maybe all that interested. They don't understand the process, but it is going on the lines for the state legislature and for Congress. And we keep hearing that at these hearings, I have nothing in common, or someone will say we've got nothing in common with this particular group.
Yeah. So people are invited to comment on the lines. Right now we've got draft lines drawn. And one of the concepts in law is that they try to draw lines around communities of interest, which it's not well defined, but it's not supposed to be people of the same party. It's supposed to be more like towns, municipalities, mm-hmm. or school districts. Neighborhoods to an extent, people like if you're in, on the south side, you want to keep that together. The mm-hmm. midtown, you want
Sounds
to keep that
more
together.
More geographic.
Yeah, but it could be cultural. Anyway, so I noticed and I wrote about this that people seem to be, because it's a process of dividing one group from another or one area from another, people who really like or really hate the lines as they're drawn say they have nothing in common with people, for example, in the city of Tucson. That's what you heard a lot from people who live in Marana or that northwest side going up into Pinal County. They were, this is a meeting last Saturday, and they were defending the existing lines, which draw a district that goes from Saddlebrook down to Marana and Oro Valley, across the mountains, then takes in Tancredi Valley, the South Houghton Corridor,
over
and
to Grandma's house, right?
Yeah,
over the hills, it just keeps going. Yeah,
hills we go. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, it is explicitly a partisan gerrymander. Now, you can talk about districts being drawn that benefit one party or the other, and that's typical. But what's different about this is that it was explicitly drawn to give Republicans an advantage and representation in the state legislature from Pima County. That's what the Southern Arizona mm-hmm. Leadership Council asked for, and that's what the independent member of the commissioners, the chair,
to give
said
Republicans
she was trying to
a
do.
Voice right. in Southern Arizona.
Yeah, and so, you know, abstractly, that's not a problem, but that is not that makes this a partisan gerrymander, you know, because you are drawing a really screwy district in order to give a party an advantage. And so my point in the column, and I think it holds for our politics in general across the country, is that this whole idea of having nothing in common with the other is really sad and dangerous. The fact is, you know, the people in Marana, although they may consider people in Tucson to be, you know, living in a different place and all that, we have most things in common, you know, what we want out of life and that kind of thing, what, you know, who we love and the values we want to protect. They're pretty similar, I think universal in most cases, but we kind of caricature each other, and those caricatures allow people to say they have nothing in common with the other, therefore divide us this way so that my party has an advantage. It's a way of excusing a partisan gerrymander.
Folks have probably heard about the newspaper that you work for, Lee Enterprises, is your publisher of the Arizona Daily Star. And I think you've got the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Buffalo News, dozens of other newspapers. And there's been this attempt by Alden Global Capital Hedge Fund to to take over the Arizona Daily Star. And this particular hedge fund has a reputation for really heavy-duty cost-cutting and layoffs. How concerned are you, Tim Steller?
I'm concerned, for sure. I mean, as you say, they have a pattern of buying out companies and then slashing all costs, and that reduces the news coverage and that sort of thing. Our company, so just to be clear, Lee Enterprises owns half of the Arizona Daily Star. Previously, when the Citizen still existed, it was, I think, more than half under a JOA, joint operating agreement. Okay. Mm-hmm. But now, since the Citizen was folded by Gannett, Gannett owns half of the Star, and Lee Enterprises owns half. And that could be significant as this plays out, because while Lee has maybe been the more generous partner of the two, it could be that if we get bought out, then we'll have Gannett and Alden, and then suddenly Gannett will be the more mm-hmm. generous owner of the two. Mm-hmm. But also, Lee Enterprises is fighting the takeover, and you know, they've done a variety of different things. The latest is that they rejected the offer unanimously. The board said no. But the thing I didn't like about that was that they gave as a reason that Alden had undervalued Lee. The reason I don't like that is that, I mean, that's just an invitation to offer more, yeah. you know?
Okay.
And I don't want them to take over
the
at all.
Yeah, we can up the ante.
Yeah.
Yeah. It opens the door to upping the ante. So in a way, this is buying some time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So Lee has also put into operation some other clauses. I believe if... I'm not going to get the precise details. I'm not going to give the precise details.
No.
But if Alden buys more than a certain percentage of stock, then Lee can sell at a discount rate to other mm-hmm. buyers. Anyway, the point is to dilute their impact, and so they're trying to do something. But oftentimes these things end up in not even if you are successful in fighting off one company, then that means you do it by selling to another company, because It's hard to resist the big capital when it swoops in like this.
But all you're doing as a true professional is taking one day at a time, right?
Yep. What the heck are you going to do?
I'm enjoying life, yeah.
You
got another column coming up Sunday. What's in the paper Sunday? You going to do anything special on your column?
I mean, everyone's special. Oh, it's like asking if my kids, one is more special than
What's
the other.
What's the topic going to be?
I'm writing about self-defense laws and a couple of cases in Tucson. You know, we had the Rittenhouse trial recently, and so that's on people's minds. And I'm writing about a couple of cases that occurred almost the same time in February, one involving a judge and the other involving a relative nobody who no one knows, both of whom fired what they called a warning shot, one of them charged with a felony, the other one not.
Hey, Tim, I want to wish you and your lovely family a happy holiday season and enjoy the rest of your candy. There's still quite a bit there left.
Thank you, Bill. Merry Christmas to you too.
Don't eat it all before you take it home to Patty and the family. I mean,
will not.
All right. Have a great holiday.
I'll tape it up right now.
All right. Thanks very much. We'll be right back with Weekend Watch.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. It is time for Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Wonderful to get a little bit of rain greening up the desert. So that means the rain is going to quickly pass through. It certainly has here already. It'll be moving through Silver City and Grant County, which means this would be a great weekend to take a three-hour drive over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment and the Southwest. Start your planning now. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of things to do, and some really great places to stay and to dine in the Silver City area with all that great Victorian architecture. A fun place for sure. The longtime host of Weekend Watch is award-winning Tucson publicist and Inside Tucson Business / Tucson Weekly food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt got out the Santa suit a week or so ago and quickly returned it to the closet. It was pretty simple. It had been, let's put it this way, a generous year for some fine dining for Mr. Russell. And so Santa's going to have to wait, I think, a while.
Generous is the operative word there, Bill. Yes, indeed. Back and forth from the tailor every single year is starting to get a little old.
Yeah, we're starting to wear a little thin, isn't it? Food and fun awaits over at the 4th Avenue Winter Street Fair.
It is back, the winter edition of our celebrated 4th Avenue Street Fair. It starts today, Bill, and runs through the entire weekend from 10 a.m. to dusk. Every day, of course, the fair hosts artists from around the world and decadent food from food booths all up and down 4th Avenue. And while you're down there, be sure to check out the newest restaurant to open on 4th. It's called Thunder Bacon Burger Company, which is run by local burger celeb Lindy Riley, whose work has attracted national attention on the Food Network. Personally, I'd go for the big kahuna burger that's got pepper jack cheese, grilled onions, teriyaki glaze, and a grilled pineapple that's been soaked in rum. I'm not sure if they're checking IDs when you order that burger or not, but either way, find your way to 4th Avenue this weekend.
Nothing tastes that like a burger that's got some nice slices of bacon on top. I'll tell you, that just adds that little extra touch, doesn't it? All right. Do we have another opening?
We do. Well, you know, speaking of local celebrities whose work has been featured on national TV, Chef Maria Maison of Boca Tacos and Tequila, coincidentally on 4th Avenue as well, she has just opened a market and tortilleria called Zona Tortillas de Maíz y Bodega just behind her restaurant. Now, this market sells goods from several local businesses like Yellow Brick Coffee, Maya Tea, even Pivot Produce. And some of Maria's local spices that she uses at Boca are also for sale there as well. And in the next few weeks, Bill, she's going to unveil a tortilla shop right there where her famous corn tortillas will be available per purchase. So check out the new bodega next to Boca this weekend.
How about a cocktail, my friend?
Well, this holiday edition of the monthly Scott Avenue Cocktail Corridor is tomorrow night, giving us all the opportunity to stroll and sip and sample goodies from area restaurants and lounges. Swing by Riley Craft Pizza, 1055 Brewing, Panka Restaurant, and other participating businesses that are going to be offering specials and live music, like Pearly Baker. They're going to be featuring a special champagne and sparkling wine tasting. You know, organizers say this is all about showcasing Scott Avenue's surprisingly strong cocktail scene. I just don't know if they're talking about the scene or the cocktails when it comes to strong, but there's only one way to find out, Bill. That's to head down to Scott Avenue tomorrow.
All right, Wednesday of next week, preview a Matt Russell's holiday edition of the Buckmaster Show.
You know, December is one of the most delicious months of the year against the backdrop of the holiday spirit. I mean that literally, Bill. So next Wednesday from during the noon hour, I will take over the coveted seat in the Bustos Lounge there and host the Buckmaster Show. We're going to be bringing in some culinary and cocktail characters who make news all year round, but they've got especially some fun things to talk about in this holiday season. It's going to be a blast.
That's going to be birthday week on the Buckmaster Show. Matt Russell, thank you so much.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. We just are so proud of everybody here at Bustos Media in Tucson, including my engineer, producer, Tom Fairbanks. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy the holidays.